Welcome to Fourth Stream Radio, where we consider concepts to help on your quest to a satisfied mind. And today, Dave and I are talking about when we come to the point, or have we come to the point, of saying, who is this man?
Yeah. Well, it's in the context of a discussion of the kingdom, finding your true self. And I'm looking at the book that I wrote. It's kind of like a prototype book, and it's got a chess piece on the front. Mm-hmm. Because I like the photo because it reminded me just how life is. You know, life, it's not like life is a game, but there is strategy to life. And then on the back cover, I have this really nice gold crown.
Lovely crown.
Because, you know,
that's our goal.
That's the goal, you know, that we're trying to achieve. So we're talking about the kingdom. And when we look at the book of Matthew, there are all of these different explanations, word pictures, representations of the kingdom, because it's king first. Mm-hmm. Kingdom second, and then comes church. The church grows out of the kingdom, and the kingdom grows out of the seeds that the king plants. That's incredibly important to understand, especially from an interior perspective as far as being a Christ follower.
Right.
So this particular passage, I just love. It's out of Matthew chapter 8, and we are answering the question, who is this man?
And I love it too, because it's an incredible piece of our history, of our Christian heritage, I think. It's such a powerful example of someone's understanding of who Jesus really is. And, you know, Jesus is meek and he is kind, but he is powerful. And that should be overwhelming to me, and this is such a good example of that.
Well, just to set the table for this a little bit, we'll be talking about a centurion. And a centurion, as much as I can tell by my research and investigation, they oversaw, I mean, it would make sense there would be 100, but between 80 and 100 soldiers. And he was in a garrison up by Capernaum. And I remember when we went to up to the top of the Sea of Galilee, and Capernaum is up in that area. And you realize it's pretty remote.
It's remote and it's tiny.
Yeah.
It is not very large at all. So to think that there were 50 to 80 to 100 soldiers around, you kind of go, well, that would be the town.
Well, and they kept order, not just in that town, but in that area. So when he starts talking about sending soldiers and being under his authority, I mean, that was a very real thing to him, because he was in charge of taking care of the law and order of an area. And that's kind of the context of this. So you got the Roman part of it kind of coming together with the Jewish part of it.
Right.
And then Jesus is there.
And the clash that's there.
Yes.
Because they do not like the Romans. They don't like being ruled by the Romans. It's very frustrating for them.
So when Jesus entered Capernaum, a centurion came to him. So there apparently was more than one. This is a centurion. So a centurion came to him, imploring him, saying, Lord, my servant is lying paralyzed at home, fearfully tormented. And Jesus said to him, I will come and heal him. Now, there's a lot of emotion here, and I don't know exactly what that means related to servant, because I didn't look up that word, but obviously this is a subordinate of the centurion. Mm-hmm. And so he's having this this compassion on somebody who's working for him, and he's describing that he's paralyzed and he's at home and he's being tormented.
Yes, he's in incredible pain. And really, you have to think of it as he can't think of anything else because his body is bound by the pain. And interesting that this man had compassion on his servant like that.
Yeah, and it's one of the thousands and thousands and even millions of stories. I try to imagine what heaven is going to be like. And I imagine coming into different rooms and different parts and somebody saying, oh, that's the centurion over there Jesus healed his servant. And
or to be the servant.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it will be never ending.
It will be a
never ending story of the glory of God and how it worked itself out through the face of Jesus. Pretty cool. So Jesus, you know, says what you would hope that he would say in a situation like that, but you get such a different response. Jesus said to him, I will come and heal him.
Now, and he knew he didn't have to go there to heal him, but he was willing to do that.
So, but then the centurion said, and this is
huge. It is.
I mean, this guy had authority, You know, from a perspective compared to Jesus, he had way more authority than Jesus did from a Roman perspective.
Yeah, he says, "Oh no," said the captain, "I don't want to put you to all that trouble. Just give me the order, or just give the order, and my servant will be fine. I'm a man who takes orders and gives orders. I tell one soldier, go, and he goes, and to another one, I say, come, and he comes, and to my slave, I say, do this, and he does it." And Jesus is taken aback.
Yeah, because he's stunned. Well, it's stunned because now he has spent 30 plus years with humans, mm-hmm. and he has not bumped into this kind of a response. And you would think that this would be coming out of a Jewish person,
right?
But it's coming out of a Roman who is recognizing. So when he says, "I'm not worthy for you to come under my roof," what humility is being displayed there? And that kind of goes back to Matthew chapter 5 and back to the Beatitudes and thinking in terms of how, you know, humility is the entrance of the door into the kingdom of heaven. And this man is evidencing a very real humility when he didn't have to.
Excuse me. I love, too, that the centurion is talking about people he commands. You know, he understands, though, that Jesus commands illness and demons.
Yes.
So he understands that Jesus commands all the unseen things. So what an incredible thing to recognize yourself as a leader of people. But for him, he recognizes that Jesus is commanding so much more.
Well, and he says several things in that regard. He starts out with, "I also am a man under authority." So I get it. I'm under the authority of Rome, and the soldiers are under my authority. And I say to this one, go, and he goes, another, come, and he comes, and to my slave, do this, and he does it. So he's looking at the whole panorama of understanding the chain of authority, which, you know, really God operates that way, whether we like it or not.
Jesus was under God's.
Yeah, absolutely, and totally submitted to the authority of God, of his Father. Now, when Jesus heard this, he marveled. What was the word in your translation?
Taken aback.
He was taken aback. He marveled, and he said to those who were following, "Truly, I say to you, I have not found such great faith with anyone in Israel."
Yeah, and I love this, too. It says, "I've yet to come across this kind of simple trust in Israel, the very people who are supposed to know all about God and how he works. This man is the vanguard of many outsiders who will soon be coming from all directions."
Well, and I think religious people, we have a tendency to make things complicated, more complicated than they really are. And this man was cutting right through it. "I understand what authority is. I understand the authority that you have. You see my need. I've expressed it to you. You're willing to respond. And I know you don't even have to go there."
But where did he learn that? He must have been observing and actually believed it long before he came to Jesus. It's amazing.
Well, the guy is moving around in really an area where a lot of the healings were going on. You know, Jesus didn't do all of his work in Jerusalem, and there was a reason for that. But up in the up in the countryside, and particularly in Capernaum, which was a fishing village, which would have been under the authority of this centurion, well, he's bumping into all these people, and he's beginning to see the crowds swell and coming to find healing. And that's why he knows what's going on, and that's why he's willing to come on his servant's behalf. "I say to you that many will come from the east and the west and recline at the table with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob in the kingdom of heaven." And that's, you know, Gentiles are going to be a part of that as well, not only Jews, obviously. "But the sons of the kingdom will be cast out into outer darkness," and that's the Jews. "In that place there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth," because they have not gotten what the centurion had come to realize about the authority of God.
Yeah, and so Jesus is talking about people who are kind of growing up in the faith, but don't really have true faith on the inside.
Now, what's cool about this environment is this is in the context of Peter's home. Remember when we went to Capernaum and they said, "Well, that was Peter's home over there," and you kind of look at it.
How can anybody live in there?
Yeah, well, it was a ruin. But you kind of look around.
No, I didn't mean that.
All the ruins of.
I could picture it unruined, but still, I couldn't imagine it.
But it's a fishing village. And it's overlooking the Sea of Galilee, and you look at it and you think, well, that would be really cool if that was Peter's house. So Jesus said to the centurion, "Go, it shall be done for you as you have believed." And the servant was healed at that very moment. Well, when Jesus came to Peter's home,
because that's where... Okay, now stop there, because I get a kick out of this. End of story. You know, he was healed. We're going to move on.
Boom.
But imagine what that servant experienced. Paralyzing pain to health, like from 1 second to the next.
Boom.
What had his family gone through? Did he have children? You know, did he have a wife that was worried sick about him? And for how long? You know, we don't know. Did it just happen that morning and then the centurion came to Jesus? Or had this been going on for a little while? And the centurion must have cared enough about him to be moved to go to Jesus and ask for help. And then did they celebrate?
Yes.
You know, and then all the soldiers around seeing that. I mean, you would never be the same.
Well, and just think about that centurion's life because this was his, he obviously believed that Jesus had the authority. Mm-hmm. Now he's made the request. Jesus has responded. I mean, how would your life ever be the same?
It wouldn't. And then, you know, there had to be people around that said, it's just coincidence.
Jesus is then off to his next miracle.
Yeah.
So Jesus said to the centurion, go, it shall be done for you as you have believed. And the servant was healed that very moment. When Jesus came to Peter's home, he saw his mother-in-law lying sick in bed with a fever.
So Peter must have been married.
Yes. Yeah, well, we know he was from a couple of passages. He touched her hand, and the fever left her, and she got up and waited on them, which was really the purpose of the miracle. The guys needed somebody to take care of them. When evening came, and this is such a beautiful picture here, when evening came, they brought to him many who were demon-possessed, and he cast out spirits with a word and healed all who were ill. And this is sometimes called the sunset miracles. And just think of how many evenings, how many days where this would happen and the day would end and people would be finding Jesus and bringing the people that they loved and they cared about. Because the centurion is one example of that. But Peter cared about his mother-in-law. I would think.
Well, and then when you think that, you're right, sunset miracles. So this went into the evening. Sometimes it sounds like it went late. And then you hear about Jesus getting up really early. And I think, how did he do that? To have so much emotional sort of pressure. Because I look at my life, I don't like to get up early if I've stayed up late. I don't want to serve anybody.
Well, you know, Jesus didn't do a lot of show and he didn't do a lot of drama. It was just the raw power of God that was present for him to do the healing that he did. And that just made me think about what a challenge that is for the modern American mind, because authority under kings and dictators in history is absolute. And it's going on today. I mean, you can see situations where awful and some good things happen under that kind of control and authority. But most people don't have the luxury of the covering of the law of God or God's morality. And giving extra thought to the authority that Jesus exercises is worth our time. It's at the root of why we bend our will before the King of the earth, because our King is just and our King is true and our King is kind. Mm-hmm. And the kind of compassion that rolls out of the person of Jesus Christ, that's who God is, because he is God. And that makes me so thankful to serve a God who has this kind of authority and who takes this kind of authority and not just heals people, but he heals souls. What a wonderful gift.
It made me think when the centurion said, oh, you know, you don't need to come to my house, almost like he wasn't worthy. It made me think of John the Baptist saying about his shoes, who I'm not worthy to even untie.
Yes.
They seem to have the same heart toward Jesus.
Yeah. Well, we're reading from a book, Kingdom, Finding Your True Self. And you can find that at fourthstream.com, where there's a collection of resources to help you and those you know experience the freedom of a kingdom life. If you'd like to listen to today's program in its entirety, go to fourthstream.com and click on the radio button.
Together, we're finding hope at fourthstream.com.